2019 Fairchief County Board of Commissioners meeting. Mr. Weston is going to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance and the invocation.
Thank you. Let us pray. Heavenly Father and Eternal God, Lord, we just come to say thank you, Father, for all of your many blessings. Thank you for this beautiful time of year, Lord God, and all of the beautiful things that you've given us and all the bounty. Lord God, we thank you for the opportunity as commissioners to be able to work together for the good of this wonderful community. Lord God, we ask that everything we do might be pleasing in your sight. Lord, be with us and guide us and give us a listening ear and an understanding heart so that we might make decisions that are best for this community. We ask these blessings in your son's name. Amen.
Amen.
Join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Weston. We usually start off with 3 minute public comments. We have any public comments? State your name and where you live, sir.
Mike Freeman. 1015 NC 45 South Mary Hill.
Thanks, sir.
But as you can see tonight, I'm here on ABC Board Business. I come to invite each and every one of you, the Bertie County Board of ABC Board and the Board of Education, in partnership, will on April the 29th have a pre-prom alcohol awareness day. The ABC Commission will provide an ambassador to give you vital information on the event, and the DHSS will provide what is called the Batmobile. The Batmobile Breath Alcohol Testing Mobile Unit, or Batmobile as it's called, is a 45-foot vehicle that is fully equipped for processing drivers at DUI checkpoints. Traveling teams of law enforcement personnel operate the vehicle and give live demonstrations. The Talk It Out Speakers Bureau will provide a speaker that includes several powerful pre-approved speakers whose lives have been directly impacted by underage drinking tragedies. They share their story and discuss the real consequence of underage drinking. So we hope each and every one of you can attend. We will have Highway Patrol, Emergency Management, Sheriff Department personnel there too.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
You said what time you booked?
Mike, you tell you what time? You said 4:29. What's the time?
April 29th, 8:30.
8:30.
Any more comments?
No.
All right, if there's no more comments, we're going to move on into the appointment report. Do I have a motion to go to Board of Equalization Review?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. You have a ballot, Judge.
Good evening. As you convene this Board of Equalization Review to hear any tax appeals that have been filed at this time, they have not.
Wonderful.
That's it.
That's it.
Make a motion, we come out.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Jody. CPTA annual report presentation by Ms. Perry, Executive Director.
Good evening, David.
Good evening. Yes, ma'am, please.
Somebody from maintenance to come in and fix it.
first of all, I wanted to give you a little bit brief presentation about history of Shenandoah Transportation. We're better known as CPTA, and we were created in 1977 by Burt T., Kirkwood, Halifax, and Northampton County Board of Commissioners. Our mission is to provide safe, adequate, and convenient transportation to the jurisdictional area. The agency was named for its location in the basin of the Chowan and the Roanoke Rivers. CPTA is the oldest regional transportation authority in the state and is one of the first coordinated systems. CPTA has a very large service area and very rural. CPTA has a 9-member board that is appointed 2 from each county, and Halifax County has 3 appointments, being the size of the county. We operate 31 routes throughout the service area. We maintain a fleet of 27 vehicles and 2 service trucks, and we currently have 21 employees. CPTA contracts with Burt T. County, the Department of Social Services, and the Department of Aging. And within the other rural counties, we contract the same, and we have a few private contracts such as Ruralville and other providers. We have Saturday transportation that's available for our dialysis at the current time, and requests may be made Monday through Friday by calling 10 o'clock the day before you need transportation. Now, I wanted to just briefly say that in 2016, we were approved as being a provider for medical transportation through the NC Track system, where before that date, we would invoice the DSS for our services, but now we can bill directly into NC Tracks, which is a federal funded operated service. So in years past, you know, the county, I guess, would like pay us for our transportation services, and then it would be reimbursed once the county got it reimbursed through NC Tracks. But now we've kind of eliminated that, and we bill directly into NC Tracks. But the Department of Social Services has to prior approve the request for transportation before we can get paid. Now I'll move on to the fiscal year report, FY18. And if you look at the balance sheet, we had assets and liabilities of $2,592,212.88. Our revenue, we had $1,510,792.09. Our expense disbursements, we had $1,338,487.89. You can see a breakdown of our revenues and expenses of different grants that they come from. We did receive an operating grant in 2017-18 for $95,739 that was approved by the NC State at that time, but we're not receiving it the year that we end now, which is FY18-19. So we did get lucky that year. If you look at the operating statistical side, the service miles was 547,313 miles. We provided 24,274 hours for the year. Our operating cost is $607,230.94, which gave us a cost per mile of $1.11. Our cost associated with maintenance was 24 cents a mile. And our passenger trips, it gives you a list of the trips for Burt T., Halifax, Hertford, and Northampton County, which totals 55,428 passengers. And by service, our general public was 17,806, and our human service was 37,619. If you look at the bottom, it gives you our board appointments. For Northampton County, we have Mr. Aussie Bronax, Ms. Rebecca Stapleton. Halifax, we have Ms. Patricia Whalen, Chris Roundtree, and Caleb Ellum for his 17-18 year. For Hertford County, we had Mr. George Holly, Mr. Axon Bracey. And for Burt T. County, we had L.C. Hoggard and Mr. Morris Roscoe for that year, which Mr. Morris Roscoe retired at the end of 2018 with a 35-year tenure on our board. And now we have Mr. Mitch Cooper. So we welcome Mr. Cooper to our board. This is our report for 17-18 year. Are there any questions?
Ms. Curry, I do have one question. It's just a question about passenger trips. And I noticed that in Burton County, our numbers are a little bit low, 5,500 compared to other similar size counties around 79,000, 8,000. Are there things that we can do or ways we can communicate with our public to make them more aware, to move that passenger, that numbers up some? Do you get into that kind of thing, or?
Yes, sir. We do promote the service through newspapers and radios. But I'm glad you asked that question, because we had a decrease in passenger trips by 20% last year. One reason, the main reason, was due to the weather. When we have inclement weather, or we have weather such as flooding, we cannot operate those vehicles. It's a safety hazard, and Burt T. County and Hereford County were down a little bit. Well, all the counties were down because of the weather. Now, when it flooded here in Burt T. County, that we were not able to come in here for several weeks until the flood waters receded. So that impacted it as well. But usually, it's up more than what you're seeing. But, to answer your question, yes, we do publicize, and we go out to different, vendors, fairs, elder fairs, and things of that nature.
There's a reason I bring it up. One of the real problems for us is the size of our county, 700-plus square miles. So you'd think that, transportation would be an especially difficult, problem for us with just the mileage. But if there were ways that we could, and we also had the largest numbers of seniors percentage-wise in our population and the fastest growing numbers of seniors. So, if there are things that we can do to help spur, the usage, it looks to me like we need to try to do it.
Yes, sir. I agree. Is there any more questions? Well, lastly, I would like to say I certainly appreciate you giving me this opportunity to make this presentation, and I certainly appreciate all the support that you give to Public Transportation. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
ma'am.
Next up, Hurricane Matthew recovery update by Chris Hilbert, the Holland Consulting Planner.
Thank you, Chairman. It's good to be here. I'm going to just give you some numbers, give you somewhat of an update of where we stand with the hazard mitigation grant program. You recall about 75% of that is buyouts. The other 25 is elevation. So we've been really busy. We've got 30 title opinions completed, 25 site surveys have been done, 21 appraisals. We've got 12 houses under contract. The closings are going to be pretty continuous this month and then going into the summer. Working on 9 offers right now. We've got, even driving up here, I got people, staff working on those offers. So we're getting those out the door. We've ordered more appraisals, more surveys, so we're really making progress on that. So that's kind of where we stand with that. With the elevations, we've had the engineer out to 4 houses. Those engineer drawings should be done in the next couple of weeks, and then we'll get those out to bid. So we'll probably be making awards in May for the first elevations. If you might recall, we did complete 2 elevations in town. Last year, they were funded prior to Matthew, but those houses have already been completed. Last week, we met with a group from the North Carolina Office of State Budget and Management regarding the Disaster Recovery Assistance Program, the DRA program. We also discussed the CDBG-DR program. It was Mr. Castillo, Mr. Sauer, and myself meeting with them. And, we're working on identifying the units that were a result of the intake center that was in town, in the area last summer. They have been working on eligibility and environmental for those units. We're determining which units were ineligible for assistance through CDBG. You know, we're trying to fit them into the right program. We've gotten some words since that meeting that, you know, there are units approved and they're in like the environmental review process. They're a little bit caught up at the state right now. The state had to kind of reorganize a little bit after Hurricane Florence. They got a little slowed down. They've created what they call the North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency. It's called NCORE. And they're kind of setting up that whole separate entity. The group that we met with has been communicating with us since that meeting, a number of information, and we got to continue working with them. They're actually coming to my office on Friday this week so that we can meet with them a little bit in more detail. So that's kind of where we are with those other units that are not part of the HMGP. Is there any questions?
How are the appraisals working out? People satisfied with the appraisals?
With the, nobody yet has denied an offer. So yes, they've been very satisfied.
Chris, this is slightly different but related. As you know, because we've talked about this, there were three citizens in my district who we pulled them out because of the Mideast plan, which was under $40,000, right?
Right.
All three were approved initially. But we just got a shock last week that the initial appraisal is not what counts. Now they've come back when the contractor goes out, right, to now reestimate the work. One of the jobs is now $7,000 over. And the reason it's over is because of the length of time it took, right? This was mold, this was, you know, damage to the roof and whatever. And so now this person is kind of out because they're now outside of the guidelines.
Okay.
We may have found a workaround if we can go somewhere like CADA and talk about winterization, taking on some of those things like windows and, you know, some other things. But is that the way this normally works? The first estimate is not the lock-in. It's only when the contractor comes back and says, I can't do it for that amount, and says it's more?
Yeah, that, not in the programs that we run.
Right.
We lock those in. You guys have approved a couple of awards a few months ago. We've executed one of those contracts.
Yeah, I never heard of
that. One of the contracts is a little bit on hold. The guys that we met with last week, we've got to kind of work our way through that contract. There's some leniency when it comes to some of the program requirements in terms of the expenditures. So we're trying to work through and find that leniency when it applies. In the case of an elevation of a house, they had a $50,000 maximum. They talked about moving that maximum because we know that it's going to cost $50,000 for certain houses. Typically, there's a way to kind of work your way through that, but no, not in the case where we're getting sealed bids and doing awards. Those contract prices would be fixed for that work.
Yeah, well, I want to go back and revisit that with the state because this one was near the max. It was almost at 40,000, right? So we felt good that it was under the guidelines, right? But when the contract, and this was the second contractor, right? The first contractor couldn't do a job, he's down in New Bern working someplace.
Right.
Next one comes back, it's almost 20% higher, $7,700 higher. And so now the citizen is like, if we can't find another source to pick up that, and we're talking with CADA, hopefully they will, but
yeah.
I mean, this person waited a year and a half.
Right.
But now find out that maybe they won't qualify.
Yeah, I will,
crazy.
I will add one thing to it's an add-on to what you're talking about. The buyouts are going to come pretty quickly because we're able to kind of move those along. The construction work is going to take some time. because Florence didn't help us out in that regard. But it is going to take some time to actually lay the block, you know, that type of thing. So we got to kind of keep that in mind, that we've got to kind of methodically go through the construction phases of the recovery part. But by this time next year, we're going to be in really good shape. But it's going to take some time to get through.
Yeah, a lot of folks in Beaufort County, even the county, say they're having trouble finding the contractors that are going to do the work. Most of them are going south.
And a lot of them are busy still from the hurricane.
Yes.
You know, they kind of jump into the hurricane damage, and we're just now coming out.
Okay, but, but you said the magic word, your bids are locked in at that.
They do. When we do them, we can be locked in.
Any more questions?
I know they're excited that the checks are finally over, but, yeah.
Yeah, we're
doing it. I've been talking.
Yes, we've worked with the state office, Division of Emergency Management. I know Mr. Caslow over at the town is, we've worked on their system of drawdowns, you know, because there's going to be a lot of checks going out the door. He wants to make sure the money's coming back in. So.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Number four, second reading of the road safety and maintenance ordinance. Cliff?
I have a question for you. Would this be the second reading or the first reading with the changes? Because we haven't seen this, and I think we need to vote on the changes to the board. I know I
haven't.
Y'all made some amendments and it didn't go before the board, so I'm saying.
I wasn't aware there was an initial vote on the ordinance that you read last time.
Well, it says his second reading, that's why I'm asking.
Yep. Are you asking whether you have to vote on the amendments? You're asking
both.
You read both. Well, there was a public hearing last time where the initial pre-change, as I'm saying here, ordinance was presented, and I'm assuming I was not here, but I'm assuming that was read at that time. The law in North Carolina is fairly clear on this, and there's a Supreme Court case, that you can make changes to an amendment, or to an ordinance, I'm sorry, after the public hearing, so long as those changes are deemed to be insubstantial. Now, the way the court has defined insubstantial would be primarily, and I think the way for us to look at it here, is that the changes that are being made would actually benefit anyone that would challenge the ordinance, aka anyone that would be detrimentally affected by the ordinance. And I would submit to you that the changes that have been made in the ordinance that are put forth, and again, those changes were primarily made by myself, based on recommendations that I received from legal counsel that was here on certain things that were brought up at the last meeting, aka the fine being, I think some people talked about the fine being a little high. The second thing that was added was an appeals process, an administrative appeals process, which frankly benefits the citizens of the county that would come under this ordinance, because it would allow them to challenge an initial determination made by either the EMS director or the sheriff, and bring it before you guys first, before it's determined. They would have the right to appeal that determination to you guys, for you to make the determination whether it's out of compliance, which again benefits the county or the citizens of the county. And the last thing was simply a clarification on an issue that Commissioner Lee had brought up about the criminality of the statute. It was my understanding when I initially drafted it, it was the intent of the board not to have it be applied in a criminal manner. Commissioner Lee is correct that 14.4, NCGS 14.4, the criminal code does make a violation of an ordinance a misdemeanor. However, the board does have the power to state that this will not be a misdemeanor. And so I simply added that language to reflect what I believed was the intent of the board. Obviously, it's up to you for the board to vote on that at some point. But for today's purposes, what you were reading is what I would deem the non-substantial changes to the initial ordinance that was addressed at the public hearing. You know, whether you want to call that a first or second reading, I'm not sure that's that important to our discussion. But after it's read, the way I believe this process would work is that that ordinance, as it's read tonight, there would need to be a motion made to reduce that ordinance and a motion made to vote on that ordinance. At that time, the commissioners have the right, and for tonight's purposes, it would have to be unanimously passed, 5-0, for it to come into effect. If it is not, then it would be tabled for 100 days. There's a 100-day period that the board could bring it back up within the next 100 days if it's not unanimously granted tonight, and then a majority vote would be allowed to pass the ordinance. That's the process. So it seems sort of a semantic thing, whether it's a first or second reading. I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But what our position, at least, is that the public hearing was based on the ordinance itself. The general terms of the ordinance were expressed in that public notice. They were discussed here. The changes that were made reflect some of the concerns that, my understanding, the public had, and that the changes actually favor the public in the sense that it allows an appeal, an administrative appeals process. It lowers the fine, the day-to-day fine, and it takes away the criminality from the statute. Thereby, we don't have to have a second public hearing, but I think for the record, it needs to be read with the changes now, and then a motion needs to be made to introduce that ordinance, because it wasn't introduced at the last meeting. It's my understanding there was actually no motion made to introduce it, and no motion made to vote. And so that will need to occur tonight.
Yeah, you want to go ahead and do the reading?
Well, can I ask one question first?
Sure.
So, do you feel comfortable with calling this a nuisance abatement ordinance? Because the two people from the school of government that I've got emails from say it doesn't qualify. So, can you? Y'all are the ones that will be in court trying to defend it, so.
Well, two parts to that answer.
Okay.
And I did leave this out. There was some added language to it. I apologize. I was explaining the three sort of major changes I thought. I did add some language in under the authority and purpose section, NCGS section 153A, section 340, which is the general zoning ordinance power of the county. It's my position, our position, that this is a safety ordinance. Obviously, it deals with what could be termed as a public nuisance, but it is placing certain requirements on land and real property. And thereby, the authority, the general authority that the board would be acting under is the zoning authority granted by the county, or granted to the county. So.
But we don't have zoning.
Well, you have the authority to do that, and you can issue an ordinance that allows that to occur. Just because you haven't done it in the past, you can't do it back. And one thing I would make clear is that an ordinance doesn't necessarily have to fall into one category. It can be numerous things. I think that one of the issues that went along with the nuisance problem that you're discussing was the enforcement. Under North Carolina law, and I think there's an example of the grass cutting, the county has the authority when it's a public nuisance under the statute to go out and just correct the nuisance. Just sort of take the ball, run with it, correct the nuisance, then get a lien to come back and recover whatever costs they can. That's not the way this statute was written, or not the statute, this ordinance was written. It was my understanding from all the discussions we've been involved in and the things that the board, the concerns the board had, that it was a safety ordinance. In my opinion, it has, at the very least, it's a quasi-zoning ordinance. That the enforcement mechanism will primarily not be through public nuisance, although you could arguably have that right, that the enforcement mechanism that we placed in here allows for, and just to give you a general overview, the EMS or sheriff go out there, determine if they believe it's in violation. That person or persons who received the application for a violation will have 10 days to file a written appeal to the Board of Commissioners. From that point, the Board of Commissioners will have a hearing, and we will give that person the right to come in, present evidence. The sheriff or EMS director will also have the right to come in and present evidence. And it will be up to the board to make a determination whether the appeal is granted or not. If it's granted, the commissioners find that there was no violation, then obviously it takes it off the table. If the violation, if the commissioners were to vote to enforce the violation, that party would then have a chance to appeal and take it to Superior Court. At that point, it's up to the court to decide whether there's a violation, whether the ordinance is constitutional, and there's a number of issues that go into it. If even, let's say that the appeal wasn't taken, within 45 days, the way this ordinance is drafted, the enforcement is that the county is not just going to simply go out and take over, make the repairs, and place it. The county is going to use the abatement statute that it has to ask the Superior Court to abate this nuisance or a public safety problem, which will allow the homeowner or the property owner to come into court again. And it will allow them another chance to make an argument to the court and allow them time to make the repairs necessary. And then it places the onus on the Superior Court to decide, look, is this a violation? And again, if they don't get that far, how long does this person have to fix this? How much is it supposed to cost? They will then order the party to make the repairs. If they do not make the repairs pursuant to the court order, the county can then come back, hold the party in contempt, and the last step at the very end would be that the county can move for the order of abatement, where the county can then go out, make the repairs, and place a lien on the property. But that would be the last step, in a particularly long process to get there.
So if I understood the ordinance, at that last step, the judge says, yes, you got to fix it. If they refuse to, then we start fining them the $100 a day until the fine comes in before then.
Yes.
While we're waiting to go to court.
That's correct.
All right, so does General Statute 14.4, does it apply to that? Because it says you can only fine up to $500.
You're talking about the criminal statute?
Yes.
The criminal statute is not, the way the ordinance is right now, the criminal statute does not apply to our ordinance.
Okay.
This is purely a civil penalty.
So there's no general statute that says that there's a cap on how much we can fine them?
There is not, no. I mean, there's some general case law out there, and interestingly enough, it has been litigated a little bit. There's never been a consensus. I mean, there's some Eighth Amendment things that come into play. Excessive fines, you know, a governing body under the Eighth Amendment is not exposed to issue excessive fines. There's never been a true finding of what that is. I mean, there have been some U.S. Supreme Court cases discussing it. But no, there is no specific statute that states, you know, after 10 days it cuts off. It's a continuing violation.
Because it could be a while waiting to get into the court.
It could.
And at $100 a day, that could add up.
I do not disagree with that. But the criminal aspect of this has been taken out of it. So it would surely be a civil penalty. And just to, I know you didn't ask, but just to specify, just to make sure I'm totally on board here with everything, or on board with everything here, the nature of the enforcement, let's say that the county got to the point where they had to get the order of abatement, the county had to go out and make the repairs. The county can then only lien against the property that made the repairs on. On the civil penalty, which
say that again.
If the county goes out and has to make the repairs, there's going to be cost to that. So let's say it costs $5,000. That lien, that $5,000 lien, can only be placed against the property that was repaired.
So we own the road?
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Well, you have a lien against the property.
Yes.
I mean, whether you want the components, and it's another issue entirely. The civil penalty, okay, the $100 a day, that's a different way that it goes. That is enforced in the form of a civil judgment. Okay. Now, a civil judgment can be enforced like any judgment. It can be enforced against the real personal property the person has that can be in their hands on. So they're two different mechanisms, lien mechanisms, that would apply based on whether you're applying the civil penalty, which is the $100 a day, or the lien mechanism under the order of the payment.
Early on, we were told we could go after their property.
Yes.
Real property.
Yes.
Yes, but that's not the case.
You can on the civil penalty aspect. You cannot on the lien aspect. That's correct.
The fine is that we're imposed to collect. Where does that money go?
That is a interesting question. The law typically favors, giving the money to the school board. Typical penalties are recovered, and the money can normally go to the school board. The case law is somewhat sparse on that. There's an argument to be made that since the penal nature of this ordinance has been removed, that the money could remain with the county and not go to the school board. But again, sitting here today, I mean, I cannot tell you with any degree of real certainty that it would not go to the school board. I mean, it is not an issue that is addressed 100% by any case that I've seen.
I can add one more thing if you just want to say it right. I'll stop and you can talk.
No, go right ahead.
It does depend on somewhat whether it's punitive in nature. So if the penalty is more like a fine or a punishment, and it's more of a school board thing, the actual article, the section 501 in the ordinance, states that the civil fine is not punitive, but it's intended to help defray any potential costs associated with repairing the roads. So by its actual terms, it's not necessarily a punitive statute or a punitive fund. It's actually constructive. So that's an argument there that it would not go to the school system.
Can you explain for the purpose of the audience, for them, if we put a lien on the property that was repaired, what that means? I mean, what happens?
Yeah, either one of us can address that. A lien on the property that's repaired gives you, a lien right doesn't give you immediate ownership. A lien right allows you to go through a procedure to sell it to satisfy that lien. So it'd be similar to a deed of trust on a house where you borrow money and you're paying on a note. If you don't pay your note, then the bank can foreclose on your house. So it's essentially like a foreclosure right, which the county can make a decision to foreclose on that lien property if it chooses to, or it can choose not to. It just depends.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to have some discussion into the weeds about how this works. But what we've done here is we've actually improved the wording so that the citizen now has less liability. They have more options to challenge, right?
That's cool.
And that's a good thing. But let's get back to the very essence of this. If a road is deemed to be impassable by EMS or sheriff department for safety reasons, those individuals have a right to deem it so. The citizen has a right to say, I disagree. It can then come to this board. This board can say, we agree, don't disagree, right?
That's correct.
The citizen still has other rights. So the purpose of this was to help those citizens who are suffering in those situations where their safety is at risk. Let's not lose sight of that, right?
So we've now improved the situation, have less liability, less whatever, more challenges by the person who's deemed to be the problem, right? But we still want to be able to protect those citizens who have rights as well, right? So that was the purpose of this. So I think we've done a good thing by adding those safeguards, but I still believe it is the right thing to protect those citizens whose health and could be their very life could be threatened. And we have seen some life-threatening situations that we want to prevent. So let's not lose sight of that. These people are suffering, and they need assistance.
I just want to add to that. The problem is not whether or not the road needs fixing, but we're taking the county through a lot of extra steps with unknown variables. How much is it going to cost? Who's going to pay what? When all you need to do before you do an ordinance, which will affect the future, talk with the landowner. Sit down and tell them, ask them what the problem is. I said, you know, we need to go by steps. We just jumping right dead in a hole. And I don't believe Bertie County can afford to fix private roads. And where will you start? Because there's a lot of holes in roads in Bertie County. Okay.
And again, once it gets to the Superior Court, they will make that decision. That person that owns that road will either fix that road, or they can be held in contempt if they don't. And if you read the ordinance, and notice the violations upon complaint by a citizen or any other concerned party, the sheriff or director of EMS will investigate the designated area. B, sheriff or director of EMS will determine if the road in violation of ordinance. C, the county shall have the sheriff's department personally serve a written notice of violation on any landowner in violation, providing 45 days to repair the road. Number two, the appeal. The landowner will have 10 days to provide a written notice of appeal to the county. After the appeal to the county, set the hearing at the next regular scheduled meeting. C, following the hearing on the appeal, the county has 10 days to provide a written decision. Number three, enforcing the violation. If after appeal of the expiration of the 45-day time limit, a landowner has not made repairs, the county may file an action against the landowner in Superior Court. A fine of $100 a day runs during this time period following the 45-day reprieve. B, the court may initially order the landowner to repair the court at cost within a certain period of time. If landowner still refuses, county may get an order of abatement and hold the landowner in contempt. If county receives an order of abatement, the county can then go make repairs to the road and place a lien upon the property for the cost of said repairs. My question is that the money that could be used, would that be assessed on their tax charge also?
Which one are you talking
about? The lien amount or the repair of the road?
Yeah, it can be under the statutes that are the one that's cited, 153A, was it 54? Yeah, the remedies there allow cost expended to be assessed as if their tax
had not been paid.
And the judge's order can reinforce that. You can actually have that in the order as well.
I think Commissioner Baseball made a great point, and I'll give an example. Because when we first started looking at this year and a half ago plus, there were five roads that we had on the initial list that were in my district, five of them. I went out and spoke to all five of those owners to fix their roads. They did the right thing. Pay for themselves. One made a deal with the homeowners that homeowners were going to pay half, and in this case it was a she. She paid the other half. Everybody was satisfied. The other two refused to do it. So we always have the opportunity
if a road is deemed to be unsafe or whatever, to have some dialogue with that road owner. Nothing keeps us from doing that. It's those who don't take action. We must have a way of dealing with them.
And they have 45 days.
Sure they do. Sure. And a lot of other remedies, as you just read.
Exactly. That's everything in the law.
Well, I thought we were reading the whole ordinance.
I don't need to read the whole ordinance. I mean, this sums up the whole ordinance right here.
That's what so we need a motion to introduce and then a motion to vote, right?
That's right.
I'd like to make the motion to introduce the ordinance as it stands with the latest changes in it, and then to vote after that.
I'll second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Okay. And the next motion?
Is to vote. I move that we vote on that. On the, as it is now, as it stands now with the corrections.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
No.
Okay.
Okay. And what else? Cover?
Pursuant to what we talked about, what I discussed earlier, being that it was introduced, first night's introduced, it has to be unanimous vote. Obviously, it wasn't unanimous vote. So now, 100 days from today, by the time they're in the lines, that it can be brought back up at another meeting.
Is that in 100 days or at 100 days has to pass?
That's within 100 days.
Okay. All right.
Can I address?
Sure, go ahead.
Just so the audience knows why I voted no on all of that. We've just been discussing this since I've been elected. We've never discussed who's going to fix the road, if we're going to buy equipment to fix the road, or if we're going to contract it out, and if we contract it out, who that contractor is going to be. We've never discussed all the particulars. I really don't like the fact that now I'm being told that we can't put a lien on somebody's property, that the lien has to go on that piece of property that was fixed. Because no one is going to buy that piece of property on the courthouse steps. Why would they? So that means the county would then own that piece of property, and it would be ours to fix forever in 3 days. So that was my no vote.
So you would prefer that we would be able to put the lien on all of their property?
Other property other than the path that we're going to fix.
You would prefer that?
Yes. Yeah.
You prefer we put a lien on that house and that residence and other things rather than on that little piece of land?
Yeah, because if we're going to end up having that piece of property.
No, but the assumption, that's not the assumption. The assumption, why make the assumption the person is not going to do what is right? Make the assumption that people are going to do what is right.
Because you have to cover all your bases.
And Commissioner, I just want to make sure that I did fully explain it, but and I think you're understanding let's say the road attaches to a much larger parcel of land, then that entire parcel would be subject to the lien. It would not just be the area that was fixed. I just want to make that clear.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I would just like to add to that. Not that I don't want a lien anywhere. Not on the road, not their property. It's like this. If I have a road and it has a hole in it, and somebody come on my property, unless you're a visitor or one of the guests, I'm going to sue you for being trespassing on my property. Simple as that. And I don't think we need to get into that. We got revals coming up. We got a lot of things to do in the county. And to mine someone's private property is not one of them.
Thank you, Ms. Baker.
any other questions? Okay. County Manager, the Board appointment.
Yes, sir. We have two reappointments this evening. First, for the Mideast Regional Housing Authority, Ms. Vivian Saunders is eligible for reappointment and has indicated she'd like to continue serving on the Board of Social Services. And this is a bit of a change up from a meeting at the work session in February. Commissioner Bazemore is eligible to be reappointed, and she has indicated that she definitely wants to continue in that appointment. There have been some discussion and action by the board previously to put Commissioner Atkins in there, but Ms. Bazemore and Mr. Atkins have spoken, and she's agreed she would definitely still like to serve in that position. So these are two reappointments.
Okay.
Make a motion to reappoint on both boards.
A second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Consent agenda. Approved minutes for regular meeting, March 11, 2019. Approved minutes for work session, March 11, 2019. Registers of deeds report. And I'd like to handle the second, number four separately, if that's okay with everybody. Okay. Do you have a motion?
Move to approve one through three.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And number four is a resolution honoring the 100th birthday of Ms. Beulah Bernice Bond McBride. And I'll make a motion we move forward with that.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Other items, discussion, agenda D, census 2020, update from the assistant to the county manager, Dominic Walker, and follow-up from the recent Mideast Commission meeting. Ms. Walker?
I just wanted to inform the board. I had an opportunity to attend the Mideast Commission meeting 2 weeks ago. I was invited by Mr. Brian Buck to attend the meeting. Ms. Bernadette Richards, who gave a presentation on the 2020 census at our last commission meeting, gave similar presentation to the Mideast Commission. I had a conversation with her prior to our meeting or to the Mideast Commission's meeting, and some of the things that she wanted me to reiterate to the board today was making sure for our complete count census, our complete count committee, which I have already begun to start that process. I've contacted each of you just to name some people within your district that you think would be the best to represent the committee. I'll be reaching out to you again this week for those names. Ms. Bernadette had asked me to ask you guys just to think of some people who would be able to serve on this count committee who are not limited to migrant workers, immigrants, senior citizens, minority populations, etc. Individuals who are involved with Head Start or daycares, as well as we're looking just for voices that are hard to count and undercount population. Another question I had asked her was the funding piece for this. In 2010, I was informed that the county received $1,000 for grant funding for the 2010 census. Unfortunately, for this go around, Washington will not be giving out any type of funding for promotional materials. So I was informed that the county can market the census in other costly manners via putting flyers and water bills, using tax bills, also really utilizing the online presence. So I just wanted to give you that information and also just to tell the board that if it is an interest to possibly set aside funds for promotional materials, if there's an interest for that, then the county can invest in.
I have one question.
What is the process for us being able to choose people who actually go out and do the door knocking? I mean, we talked about wanting to, if we send someone into my district like South Windsor, I want someone from South Windsor to be that person. People who know, people who open the door, people who give them information, right? So is there a number yet how many people we get to hire? Do we have the final say-so on who those people are that get paid? The paid people.
So the hiring, from my understanding, the hiring process, there are a couple of managers that they have to go online and apply for the job. That job, like we can, on our side, administrative side, we can make recommendations as to who would be the best people to go out for those jobs, but those individuals, we can just mark in and say, hey, this position is open, this position is particularly open, you can apply for the job. And then on the Census Bureau side is where, how they get paid and funding on that side. Now for the count committee, for that process, the framework that I have currently working with is you guys can provide me names, an unlimited amount of names. What I will do is reach out to those individuals and it will be up to them to decide whether they would like to serve on this committee or not.
Yeah, I get the committee part. That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
But I'm actually looking at the people who are going to go and knock on doors, right? And if we get a chance as a county to make sure that our local people are those people who get those paid for jobs. I mean, they were pretty decent in pay, right? So it'd be nice to know how many there are and what the process is. But you're right, some are managers, right?
Right, right.
But then some are the ones who actually go door to door.
Right, right, right.
And we want to get as many local people as we can in those jobs.
Right, right.
And I think what you're doing is identifying people that can be the key people to find some of these people for us. And that's what you had called me and asked me about some people. That's what we discussed at the end.
Right, right. And again, I'll be reaching back out to you this week. I know I said last week I kind of got tied up a little bit towards the end of my week, but this week I will be reaching out to you for more names to reach out to from your district. And if you just have someone that you think, you know, would be great, be a great person to represent Bertie County on the committee, I will reach out to them as well. But to your question about the recruiters, the people that get paid, I can get back to you on that information.
Yep. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Moore.
Thank you.
DSS Medicaid Transformation, Ms. Cindy Perry, DSS Director.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Just fine.
Great.
I have some material I'd like to present to the board concerning North Carolina Medicaid Transformation. Change how they manage Medicaid. DSS will be taking a different turn how we do Medicaid. We will only be determined eligibility. There will be a company that will be going out doing as far as with selecting different plans for Medicaid. And on page one, where you see down into the bottom, said this is the largest procurement in department history. The selected PHP, they will be considered as private health providers. There would be four different health plans that they would have to choose. It would be American Health, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, United Healthcare and WellCare. It would be only for the clients that are receiving Medicaid only. If they are receiving like Medicare, you know, they would not be a part of the plan. Only for Medicaid and Health Choice. And on the second page, we are in Region 6. So we are due to go live in February of 2020. And basically what they would do, they would be sending out welcome package of everyone that would be eligible for this program. And right now we do not have a count, so they would be letting us know probably within another month or so. And the, for our area, we are in Region 6, they will start sending out the weapons package probably in September. And they will have up to December the 13th to make that decision. And if they do not choose a plan, the company will do, they will do it for them. And come April the 10th, they would have a meeting for the commissioners to, you know, to go over the plan with them. And it will take an effect on Berkeley County. All 100 counties will be affected with this new Medicaid management.
What would be the major difference now versus 2020?
Well, right now they have a choice to go to which doctor they want to, you know, which probably hospital they have a choice. But coming 2020, they will have to go through this health insurance company.
They would tell them which doctor to go.
Right, they'll have a choice. Yeah.
Interesting.
They would have a choice. And if we only have four, you know, that we can choose. So it's pretty much, and with the hospitals and the doctor office, they would begin to, you know, reach out to these agencies.
Do we know what Biden's going to accept? I mean, because Biden has all the hospitals around.
Right, Biden has all the hospitals.
Do we know which plan they're going to be a part of?
No, we don't know. And it has been told to our agency, we can only do the eligibility part. We cannot, you know, far as help assist them, tell them which plan to take, you know, that would be up to the company. So we cannot, you know, help assist them. It will be, they will have a call center. In that welcome package, it will be a call center, a call number that they can call. Only thing we would be, you know, have to do the eligibility.
With the rural hospitals vanishing, it's going to be a mess.
And also with non-emergency medical transportation, that would affect our agency too. They will choose the which transportation, you know, agency they want wish to use.
So is this all because of the Medicaid expansion? It didn't expand?
No, it's not to do with Medicaid expansion. This was back in 2015 when the General Assembly was looking forward to change from fee-for-service to managing for care.
It's just now getting to us.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong on this paragraph, but the citizen gets a chance to look at all four plans, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So if I'm concerned about, I like being transported by X,
right,
I need to choose one who's going to be approved that will use X, right?
Right, but the company, one of these insurance companies, gonna help assist, and they probably gonna look for the cheapest transport system.
But will I know that?
Yes, you will.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So, just like I know if my regular physician is covered under one of these plans, right, or not, I can know that.
Right, you'll know that.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. So, whose responsibility is it to educate that citizen about, yeah, the differences between these plans and what they need to look for in order to be served well?
Right.
Whose responsibility is that?
Right. It's the it's going to be the call center, which they're going to receive a welcome package in the mail. And once they receive that welcome package, they will have the opportunity to get it, go over it. And if they don't understand, they will have a 1-800 number that they can call. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example, and this is just correlation today. Today, because my mother is on the state plan, right?
Right.
And Ms. Mary Clay, my cousin, is on the state plan.
Right.
Someone from the state came out to their house today to sit down with them, to go over to see if they wanted to stay in the plan, make changes, do whatever they wanted to do. But they had to request that.
Right, they had to request it.
So, I mean, citizens need to know what their rights are, right? Because I think there may be some similar kinds of things. I'm just concerned that if we just say somebody will get a package in the mail and somebody will call you, you know, you ain't gonna talk to nobody. Most folks ain't gonna deal with that.
And we expect we will get a lot of calls from, you know, through DSS, but, you know, we would have to refer them back to the policy. And other, you know, like the community, you know, we need to be more involved with the community so that they know what's coming out.
Hopefully they don't just throw it away, they just junk mail like right. That.
Right. And, like I said, letters will be going out. Letters will be going out to all the ones that will be a part of the plan. So they, you know, like I said, the welcome package will be going out. And there will be four additional meetings that we have to attend, you know, before it goes out. So once we get that list, we can probably pretty much, you know, be in contact with the citizen and let them know that you're on the list or you need to be mindful if you receive any information concerning the data. Please.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. President. All right, Commissioner's report. Ms. Baysmore? Commissioner's report.
I'm still on Medicaid. I have a report for Bertie County, stewardship report from the risk management. I attended the meeting. And there's several good things for law enforcement, such as soft body armor grant program, legal liability risk management institute, and regional supervisory officer training. And it shows here the money that we have secured in Bertie County. And I'm gonna leave that with Scott so he could get copies for everyone. And also, I'll be attending the volunteer banquet at the prison, the 4th. And I attended the book challenge. That was very, very good. I mean, it's where students read books and then they're challenged against each other and they had to tell the story and know every intricate part of the book. And I just hope that the county can help support it. Because it's a really good program, and it's against the schools, each school against each other. And I'll let Quadre tell you more about that, because I'm quite sure he knows. All right, that's it.
Mr. West?
Yeah, well, not much. I will be attending the volunteer dinner as well with the president. I think I've missed it once in the time I've been commissioner. But prior to that, in that morning, we have the State of the East Region meeting in Greenville from 8:30 to 2, so I'm going to attend that one as well. And the other thing is I'm pleased to announce that I was just notified that the governor has submitted my name to be the Bertie County resident on the Mount Martin Community College Board. So assuming I pass the background check.
You're never going to make it.
Then I will be your real representative. I squeak by. That I'll be the new representative replacing Nancy Joyner, who's represented Bertie County very well.
All right,
well, it's my turn. I am very pleased to announce that Kylesville will begin to have the mobile food bank. I go to their area on the third Thursday of every month, so if you can go and help them volunteer, show up about 4 o'clock, and I'm sure they'll put you to work. Or if you know of anybody or you yourself need a little extra groceries in the pantry, be there and get in line. We're thrilled that this has come together so quickly. I haven't even announced it to this group that I was even working on it. It just happened so quickly. I'm thrilled. The mayor's wife, Ms. Peel, Linda Peel, is heading that up. And so if you've never volunteered at a food pantry before, it's wonderful blessings, isn't it? So, yeah. So, also, I attended the Criminal Justice Summit in Raleigh last week. I have to say that it was probably one of the best things I have been to since I've been elected. It was most informative. The way it was done was so organized, and we talked about bail reform and barriers to reentry with the fines and the fees that come along with all that. We talked about overcriminalization. That's where I found out about the general statute that we referenced earlier. And then we talked about barriers to reentry, the criminal record, and collateral consequences. So it was really a great day, and it was a full day, really full. But and then April the 11th and 12th, I will be going to Portland, Oregon. This trip is being sponsored by the National Association of Counties, and they call it a peer exchange. We'll be talking about justice-involved individuals with behavioral health, reducing racial and ethnic disparities, and implement law enforcement diversions, and provide transitional housing, and so much more. So I'm looking forward to my trip. It's always good to get away and meet with other county officials and talk about what they're doing in their counties and actually going and seeing what some counties are doing. So thank you, NACO, for sponsoring and paying for what. I too was at the Battle of the Books, and those young people are very impressive. They read, I think it's 5 books, and they're asked questions all about that book, and they have to cite what the book's title and the author is. And all of them did just a fantastic job. And so Coleraine Elementary will be going forward to regionals this coming week to represent Berkeley County. And so they did a great job. Did a great job.
Mr. Atkins. Nothing. Okay. Junior Commissioners. Ms. Williams.
Hello.
Hi.
What thing is the same going on? Well, I don't know if there's anybody who has children, but a teen court. We're competing for the district because we're number one in the district for Berkeley County and all followers also. And we'll be competing against other counties. And hopefully we'll win a competition to win Berkeley County's name, because Berkeley County isn't glorified for things that we do. So we're trying to make sure we can get well known, get positive things out there.
Fantastic.
Feels good.
Okay, so first, let me say this. Coleraine. But anyway, because trust me, I was in the books my middle school years, and yes, it is. It's exciting, but it's tough at the same time, because those books do run kind of similar as you go on further and further. But anyway, not to hold up your time, I do bring with me news. Now, I want to know if you will be able to help me with the news. So, I have word that the Good Shepherd's Pantry down the street, down that way, is they are running out of space to put their food. So they're getting so many donations that they're running out of space to put their food, which is kind of a mediocre task, if you ask me. So, right now, as I see it, there's two ways that we can mend this problem. A, we can build them a new storage facility. But I don't believe that Berkeley County has the money for that, and I believe that that's going to be way too late by the time this goes. Or two, we have the Berkeley Early College, and we have the FFA. So basically what we propose to do is, we have a building that we are not using, and to my knowledge, it is up to code, because we just moved the Berkeley EMS out of it, I believe, in August, if I'm correct. So what we want to do is have them store their food back there, and the FFA, when they need it, we will basically help them distribute it back to the community, as well as keep it safe and protected. So is there any way that you all could help us move on that? Because we really don't need to be turning away any type of food for anybody, because that one box, that could be a lot of miles.
So is there any way that we can help move that along?
I spoke with Mrs. Freeman, Ms. Combs, and told her that we would give her support, but she is supposed, they're meeting with the Board of Education to get that approval. And then, you know, whatever they need from us.
Thanks, sir. County manager report.
Very briefly, Mr. Ricky Spivey, our superintendent of the water system, received notice this week. They've received two additional grants to expand their asset inventory, where they are taking the GIS, the longitude and latitude points of every valve, every meter, every connection point. One of the grants is $65,800. The other grant's $150,000. This is the either the third and fourth or fifth and sixth grant that he's secured working with our consulting engineers. So good work to Mr. Spock.
Very fantastic.
Yes.
County attorney's report. I said chloroform. Okay. Any public comments? 3 minutes. Any public comments?
Good evening.
Good evening.
I was so disappointed when I walked in and realized that my watch and this clock were not in sync. So now what I have to say is a little bit behind the times as to the discussions that have taken place this evening. But because I made an effort to come to say these things, I must say them. I cannot go home and say, oops, I didn't say anything. After the last meeting, I'm Vivian Clark, 1430 South King Street, primarily. After the last meeting, I did reach out with Commissioner Atkins and Commissioner Trent in regards to my concerns about this, the ordinance as was written. And I did speak back with Commissioner Trent with some changes that were discussed this evening. I at the moment, I was okay, but I'm so analytical. I tore everything apart that Commissioner Trent said to me and that Commissioner Atkins said, and I'm still tearing it apart. I'm hoping that each of you, all parties involved, will revisit the things that have been written, the things that have been voted for or against. Just wipe the slate clean. Revisit this entire situation. We know that the roads need to be fixed. No doubt in my mind. I've seen some since the last meeting. I just feel that the owners of these roads should receive correspondence from you, letting them know what you're going, you know, what's expected. And if, as Commissioner Wesson said previously, five were spoken to fix the roads or however it was stated, I want to give these people another opportunity to say, look, I don't want you fixing my road. I don't want you to put a tax on my, lien on my property. I'll fix it. That, and also I left a message last night for County Manager Sauer, but I guess I was too late, asking where I could find records of conversations that you all have had in the past to fix this problem. I can hear from last meeting that from 2012 or 2014, I'm not so sure until now, there have been discussions about this problem. But I use the word I see, and I think it's because I need to see some of the conversations or some of the rules or some of the written statements that you all made that were knocked down. I think it would help us, the citizens of this county, to understand that you really, really have looked at this thing and we keep knocking it down, or for some reason it doesn't pass. There are too many unknowns in my little brain, such as the cost. I mean, I know that it was said by Commissioner Trent to me, we're not trying to make this road a perfect road. But then I tore that apart. If you fixed the big hole in the road, then the ruts and the little cracks that you leave there, what's going to happen with them? Will they not then increase to get bigger, and then you got to go back and fix their hole? Years ago, when I lived here, and I was a homeowner, the driveway from the house to where the ditch began was paved. But then from that spot to the ditch, we had to put gravel and rocks, and I thought somebody was stealing my rocks, because every now and then I look and they'd be gone. So I'm wondering if this would be the same situation that we would have if you go in and fix this big hole with the crush and run or whatever we want to call it. How often would you have to revisit repairing this road, these holes? I can speak for a lot of the citizens, we would like to know, again, I think Commissioner Lee touched bases on the bid system. Who will get to do this work? Does the county have staff to do it? Does the county have the motor graders and those things with the shovel behind it, whatever they are called? Are we prepared, really, to do this? It's, again, too many unknowns for me. I can't speak for anybody else. I'm just assuming that there are others who have the same concerns. I don't know the next step. I did not quite understand the vote in the 100 days, etc. But if the public can be kept abreast as to what you're thinking, what you are going to propose before it's put into an ordinance, I would feel so much better. And again, who am I? But anyway, now I pour my little heart out to you, and I can go home in peace and say, oops, I said what I came to say. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Mr. Lord. I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
I yield to you.
Sure.
No, I apologize.
Okay.
Well, my name is Jerry Cowan, and you know that I'm up here in opposition to the ordinance. And your clock and my clock are about the same. But that said, what do we say? On time is late, early is on time. Well, I fouled up. So that being said, here I am. And I had 3-4 minutes prepared for you, but really right now I only have probably about a minute and a half. I don't see, after listening to your explanation of the changes, I don't see how these changes benefit the property owner who owns the road. Y'all are the ones who are going to pass the ordinance. Your man is the one who's going to go out and inspect and say it's bad. Now, I'm going to go before you and think for a moment that I'm going to get a fair hearing. I would hope that I would, but, you know, that's kind of letting fox into the hen house. So, I don't think the county has any business getting into this. I don't think our nose belongs in it at all. Having said that, and I'm going to read this because I want to make sure that I got it all down. It's my belief that the people on this road, and I'm empathetic towards them, they have real legitimate issues. There is no doubt of that. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here having these debates. But I strongly feel that the remedy for them is in the civil court system. You're going to end up in court anyway. So I feel like that's the place for it. Commissioner Atkins, we had a lengthy discussion last time. You don't feel like people have the means and the ability to come to court. I think that anybody can have their day in court. And I believe thoroughly that there must be some sort of legal aid program, some sort of lawyers pro bono program that can represent these people in the civil fashion and let the courts handle it. Keep the county's nose out of it. And lastly, what I've heard you say, and I think you and I have heard kind of the same thing, I feel like if we allow the county attorneys, maybe do some means testing with the clients, let the county attorneys represent these people, bring charges into the civil court system, and then let them run with it or hold their hand through the process, I think that is a much better solution. I'm not going to bring you a problem without bringing you a solution, and I think that is a solution to this issue. And I will say this in close. If any one of y'all got a letter from the law firm of Pritchard and Birch on behalf of the county, on behalf of client X, saying that your road has been inspected and found wanting, you're going to do one of two things. One, you're going to fix the road. Or two, you're going to find an attorney. And that attorney is going to tell you to fix the road. It's going to be a lot cheaper for you. I feel strongly about that. And last, and this is it, I'm done. Commissioner Lee, you're the only one who spoke up last time. I would really like to see everyone stand up and say, you will in no way, you, your associates, any of your companies, will in any way profit from the passage of this ordinance. I don't think that that's such a stretch. And I think that that's important for your accountability and transparency within this county. And I'm done.
For the record, I have no money.
Neither do I. In fact, it would be a violation of our oath.
I was unaware. Thank you.
Miss. Yes, ma'am.
Good, how are you?
Some of it I understood and some of it I didn't. But anyway, I have some people here. If you would mind letting this play at least two of the videos, because this right here, what it's going to do, is going to push you in that person's situation. And when it comes to having mercy on people, nobody knows what people really feel like unless you walk that walk and talk that talk. See, if you ain't been in that person's situation, then you won't know what it's like to be in it unless you put yourself and say, well, if it were me, I wouldn't want this to happen to me. If I was in these roads, I wouldn't want to keep coming out these roads every day. And if I had a family member, I'd be concerned about them, whether they're going to get the help if something go down with them. See, we have an ill lady, and I believe in what Matthew 7:12 said. Do unto others, if you would have them likewise do to you. And that don't mean you scratch my back and I scratch your back. But it means you put yourself in that person's shoes. It means that when you emphasize with a person, it means you feel sorry. You might feel sad, but you won't have mercy enough to do anything about it. But if you sympathize with a person, then you can put yourself in that person's shoes. You know what they're going to do. You not only emphasize or sympathize, but you'll be doing with mercy. You shall be happy. This lady right here is an attorney lady. She's very eternal. And I love my neighbor as myself, because that's what the Bible said, love your neighbor as yourself. So one time, I had said that I did not want to get involved with you. I'll let you see this.
Yeah, I don't know that all of us can see it. If it's about the roads themselves.
It's about Mr. Dora Montgomery telling me. She won't have to come.
Thank you.
give us in the service, and we are tax Burton County taxpayers, just like everybody else did. And it's not fair. And I have to have doctors and nurses that come back in to see me at least twice or three times a week. And they hate to even drive their cars back here because of the holes and stuff that's in the pavement. They don't want to get stuck. So I'm putting my 2 cents worth in here. I think it's time that something be done about this page. We have put enough money in this page for it not to be like it is out there now. So I'm asking that y'all, what you can, give us some help back here, because I really need terribly for my doctors and nurses to get back to the balance. Thank you.
Hello, this is Lisa Indrid Powell.
And, we get another, back there.
What was your name again? Your name and address, where is this at?
I'm Nancy Hill, Care Cherry Lane in Kelp.
Okay.
Care Cherry Lane in Kelp.
And the lady was talking about needing the help was who?
This is Dora McDonald.
This is Dora.
And we have another, Charles Burnham. His wife is also in the wheelchair. And she can't walk at all.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And see, that's what inspired me. Because, see, I've been back there over 20 years. When everybody was back there, we was told the road was going to be fixed, soon to build up, we're going to put a park for the kids. We never saw none of that stuff. So when we brought this road.
Can you contact the landowner, correct?
I done went to the landowner several times, you know, to try to get things done.
Does the landowner live back there?
No. No.
What's the name of the place?
Cherry Lane. And see, you know, we only thing we just need to help, you know, because this, I mean, it's very, very frustrating. I had gave up, but when Sister McGlone came back down here, it motivated me to want to do something. When I saw the situation she did, when I saw the situation for Mr. Charles White, and, you know, my heart is when I say, well, I'm going to still do what I can, speak what I can, you know, because if you don't say anything, then folks won't know. If you put it out there, then it's up to their hearts, you know, to reach out and help someone. Because all of us, you know, people say we're Christian, you know, and there's a scripture. Oh, I'm
I'm sorry. Thank you. Do we have anybody else?
My name is Lisa Webb, and I live out here too. And it's a lot why I got ailments too. And my kids were trying to get to me. But by type of vehicle you got, it really caused stroke all the way in and out. And you hit one of the holes too hard. They don't tow one of their vehicles up out there. They can tell no, because it's so bad. And I drive my little mess out, because that's all I got. So we really, if y'all can, reach out and try to help us. Like she said, I feel for the older ones too. I have that issue, but I could be in that shoe. But right now, thank the Lord where I am at. But if y'all can do anything to help us, we appreciate it.
Thank you, ma'am.
And thank y'all.
Me too. I ain't talking about my issues, but right now I ain't concerned about the rescue squad that's gonna get me too for my issues. I'm just interested in helping the elderly ones. They need it more.
Mr. Baysmore.
Tim Baysmore, 340 Cedar Lane Road. Like everyone else, I don't have a problem with the roads being fixed. That's not an issue for whether or not the roads should not be fixed. Obvious. But what I do question is the method that you all plan to enforce. And if I heard everything correct, there's some things I would have not listened to or didn't hear. But you put a lane on that particular road and you fix it, then what? You take it from the landowner, then who does it belong to? Nobody's going to purchase a road. So I guess the county will own it, and then the county has to keep it. Then you look at these developments, and I won't name any, but there are some that have private lots or ownership somewhere thereabout. You're still going to fix a road. Who pays for it? The logging paths and whatever. If the sheriff can't go down one road, then you penalize him for that. Certainly emergency vehicles got to go down a logging path as emergency. And as I think it was Mr. Lee alluded to, who's trained to say? Because your car hit the bottom, if you're driving a Mustang or driving a four-wheel drive or whatever, who's qualified? And then when whoever say, I don't like road B, let's take it to court. And then the landowners there say, well, my road's no better than this one over here. Then you start dividing the county, just as we have people in Washington, D.C., dividing the country. Also, you know, I listened to the process that you all presented for Joe Citizen to appeal it. But tell me, just tell me, if Joe Citizen can't afford to fix his road, how in the name of Jesus can he go up against these guys? They're high dollar. If he high volume, then for goodness sakes, he can fix his road. He can't afford it. You're killing him. And then I wonder, is this a political move that somebody's promised somebody something? There's one road that I know of that is in bad condition. And then someone buys a lot there, say, hey, y'all need to fix this road. Hey, I own a lot back here. Why didn't he fix the road? And, you know, sometimes unpopular decisions take you nowhere. And I hate to say this, but you know what? I observe the vote that you did a few minutes ago. And it doesn't make any difference if y'all like me or don't like me, because, hey, I'll eat. But if I had to say, this young lady, and excuse me, hardworking, every day left. Hardworking, every day left. You guys got silver spoons. You don't see it. You're rich. Make them pay, get a lawyer, no big deal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Good afternoon. Annie Wilson. I'm not speaking as registered D's today. This is Annie Wilson of the Citizen. I just want to say that I know you all are going to make the right decision. You're going to think about it. But I would like you to sort of tweak it, look at it a little bit more, because it is different circumstances. And we're doing what we have to do for our citizens. And that's what we have to think about. For instance, I know that there are some roads, like this lady was saying, where people stay, and the landowner, he owned the land, so he's really getting money for that property back there, so he should fix that road. There's another circumstance where I stay on the land. The landowner that sold all the property, he passed away. He was keeping the road up. We had a gentleman that put some single mobile homes at the end. It's a lot of traffic. In our neighborhood, we always got together and fixed the road. But then we had a group that come through that traffic in and out. We got all the rain. And it just, the road, it got worse. It got worse. So what we did, thank God, we were fortunate enough that eight of us got together and got some rock, you know, put down. But we have to think about the citizens that can't do that. That's what I just want to, you know, think on that term. And in the case that, on that particular road that I stay on, all of us had said, well, they got an ordinance now. We don't have to fix this road. Let them fix it. Okay.
then you go against, you would go against everybody's land and people that work. I mean, maybe I'm not understanding it either. So I'm just saying, how would we come up with a solution for that? If it's 10 houses back here, the road is torn all to pieces. We do have sick people out there. And then we decide that, hey, we ain't gonna put no more money into fixing it. Let the county, y'all see that it's a bad road, y'all fix it. So people gonna come and they're gonna use that also. So, you know, and I know that you all gonna make right, you know, the good decision, but then you have to look at it as somebody else's, you know, looking in at it, and somebody's staying there. That's all I'm saying. And then on the second note, I just want to say that, I don't know if you know, but this morning I was in Martin County, and the clerk of court and the sheriff came over and looked at the courthouse, and they were very impressed, and they said, the Burton County can do this. I mean, they talked about all the things, the car, Sally Court Sally. Here. They came inside the courthouse, they went into the courtroom, she came into my office, and they were very impressed. And so, those, you know, good things that you all are doing within the county. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Okay.
Thank you. I have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Have a second. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Going to get some food? Second.
Third.